Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we are continuing, coming to the end actually, this Canto 10, Chapter 12. And we'll be doing several verses, texts 40 through 44, which will bring us to the end of chapter 12. And 43 is the verse on the board. It's the verse with the extensive purport, as opposed to the others not having a purport. So I'm just going to go sequentially through them, and at text 43 we can chant together. Shisuto vacha itam dvija yada vadeva dataha shrutva svara tuscharatam vichitram prapaja bujo pitad eva punyam vayasakim yan nigrihita chetaha. In the translation for text 40, Shisuta Goswami said, O learned saints, the childhood pastimes of Sri Krishna are very wonderful. Maharaj Parikshit, after hearing about those pastimes of Krishna who had saved him in the womb of his mother, became steady in his mind and again inquired from Sukadev Goswami to hear about those pious activities. Text 41. Sri Rajovacha Brahman Kalantara Kritam Yat. Tat kalinam katam bhavet yat komare hari kritam jagu pogandake ripakaham. In the translation for text 41, Maharaj Parikshit inquired, O great sage, how could things done in the past have been described as being done in the present? Lord Sri Krishna performed this pastime of killing Agasura during his Komara age. How then, during his Poganda age, could the boys have described this incident as having happened recently? Text 42. Tat bruhi me mahayogin param yauto halam guru numane tatare eva maya bhavati nanyatam. In the translation for text 42, O greatest yogi, my spiritual master, kindly describe why this happened. I am very much curious to know about it. I think that it was nothing but another illusion due to Krishna. And there's a very short purport by Srila Prabhupada. Krishna has many potencies. Parasya Shaktir Vividaiva Shruyate Svetashvatara Upanishad 6.8. The description of Agasura was disclosed after 1 year. Some act of Krishna's potency must have been involved. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit was very curious to know about this, and he requested Sukadev Goswami to explain it. And here we come to text 43, which you can chant responsibly. Vayam danyatami loke Guru Pishatra Bandava Vayam Pipamo Muhusvatva Punyam Krishna Katamritam Vayam Danyatami Loke Guru Pishatra Bandavaha Vayam Pibamo Muhustvataha Punyam Krishna Katamritam Vayam Danyatami Loke Guru Pishatra Bandavaha Vayam Pibamo Muhustvataha Punyam Krishna Katamritam Vayam Danyam Aloke Guru Pishatra Bandavaha Muhustvataha Punyam Krishna Katamritam Vayam Danya Damaloke Guru Pishatra Bandavaha Vayam Pibamo Muhustvata Punyam Krishna Katamritam. And the word for word, Vayam, we are. Danya Tamaha, most glorified. Loke, in this world. Guru, O my Lord, my spiritual master. Api, although. Kshatra Bandava, the lowest of the Kshatriyas, because we did not act like Kshatriyas. Vayam, we are. Piba Maha, drinking. Muhu, always. Tvata, from you. Pinyam, pious. Krishna Katha Smritam, Amritam, the nectar of Krishna Katha. I'm going to read the report by Srila Prabhupada for text 43 and the translation, yes. O my Lord, my spiritual master, although we are the lowest of Kshatriyas, we are glorified and benefited because we have the opportunity of always hearing from you the nectar of the pious activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the purport by Srila Prabhupada, the pious activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are very confidential. It is not ordinarily possible to hear such activities unless one is very, very fortunate. Parikshit Maharaj placed himself as Kshatra Bandava, which means the lowest of the Kshatriyas. The qualities of the Kshatriyas are described in Bhagavad Gita, and although the general quality of the Kshatriya is Ishvara Bhava, the tendency to rule, a Kshatriya is not supposed to rule over a Brahmana. Thus, Maharaj Parikshit regretted that he had wanted to rule over the Brahmanas and had therefore been cursed. He considered himself the lowest of the Kshatriyas. Danam Ishvara Bhavas Cha Kshatram Karma Svabhavayam, Bhagavad Gita 1843. There was no doubt that Maharaj Parikshit had the good qualities of a Kshatriya, But as a devotee, he presented himself with submissiveness and humility as the lowest of the Kshatriyas, remembering his act of wrapping a dead serpent around the neck of a Brahmana. A student and disciple has the right to ask the guru about any confidential service, and it is the duty of the guru to explain these confidential matters to the disciple. Now I'm going to close off the chapter by reading text 44. Shri Suto Vachai Tamsma Prishta Satu Padarayanis Tatsmari Tananta Krita Hilendriya Krichrat Puna Lapapahi Trishi Sanai Pratyaha Tam Bhagavato Mato Tamam. And the translation for text 44, the last text in this chapter 12. Suta Goswami said, O Shanaka, greatest of saints and devotees, when Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Sukadev Goswami in this way, Sukadev Goswami, immediately remembering subject matters about Krishna within the core of his heart, externally lost contact with the action of his senses. Therefore, with great difficulty, he revived his external sensory perception and began to speak to Maharaj Parikshit about Krishna Katha. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Killing of the Demon Agasura. Om Gyanati Murandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopi Stam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamlam Shri Guru Vaishnavansha Shri Rupam Sakrihatam Sahaguna Ragunatam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Om Pariswami Dinamine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Dinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschitya Deshitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaurabhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. actually, I found it a little challenging, so many verses one after the other, and actually the last verse in this chapter, although Srila Prabhupada didn't write a purport to it, it was present in Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He has had a commentary on it, so I had to think and assemble it, so hopefully I'll be able to communicate something coherent. so these verses begin with Srila Suta Goswami saying that the childhood pastimes are very wonderful of Krishna, that is. He makes a statement, as per Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He points this out. Maharaj Parikshit, after hearing about these pastimes of Krishna, who had saved him in the womb of his mother, Parikshit, after he heard these pastimes, he fixed his heart on the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So, Yat Nikrita Chetaha, mentioned in one of the verses. So the question he asked of Srila Suta Goswami is, O great sage, how could things done in the past have been described as being done in the present? So Krishna performed this pastime of killing Agasura during his Komara age. So he was five at that time. So how then during his Poganda age could the boys have described this incident as having happened recently? So there didn't appear to be any time lapse when they reported it, even though it was 1 year later. So this is the question that's been posed by Maharaj Parikshit to his spiritual master. He's very curious, you know, why wasn't there any indication of a time lapse? Because naturally it's quite normal that one may in the present speak about something that's happened in the past, but the means by which it was relayed indicated that it was as though it had just happened. So he was curious why that was the case, since actually a year had elapsed. The question was, how could things done in the past have been described as being done in the present? That's the question. How could Krishna make the cowherd boys describe the past times which happened when they were in their Komara age, 5 years, as if they happened recently? So those are the two questions being posed by Maharaj Parikshit to his spiritual master. So Maharaj Parikshit is very curious about this matter, and he's considering that, and it's indicated in the second of the series of verses, he's indicating his thought on it. So he's giving an idea, he's presenting something as he's talking to his spiritual master after he's posed the questions, and he says, it is the internal potency of the Lord which makes unexpected things happen. And here, when he says it, he uses the word Hare Maya, which must mean Yoga Maya, as per Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, just the fact that he's using the word Hare Maya prior to Maya. It's the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So only this potency can put Krishna's eternal associates into some illusion. It's not possible otherwise. So the nature of the relationship with Lord Krishna is such that there's a transcendental reciprocation between the Lord and the devotee due to the fact that both are conscious. So that's what's allowing for that transcendental relationship. And Srila Kavi Karnapurna in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, he puts it this way: the transcendental deeds of the Lord completely eclipse the glories of the sun. One after another, the boys embrace Krishna. So this is a description that immediate moment when they've exited from the mouth of Agasura, which was the whole description. This is something of what transpires to indicate something of their transcendental relationship. So I'm wanting to illustrate it through drawing from Srila Kavi Karnapurna. So the transcendental deeds of the Lord completely eclipse the glories of the sun. One after another, the boys embrace Krishna while talking excitedly. One boy said, "O Krishna, while we played, that terrible demon devoured us and knocked us out with a burning poison. How did you bring us back to life?" Krishna replied, "I am the perfect antidote to neutralize poison and also kill the poison giver. If a man smells this medicine, he will become joyful and relish it like the taste of honey. Even the dead will come back to life and enjoy sweet rasa if they smell this medicine." So this is Krishna's response to the cowherd boys. So this is indicating, you know, both are conscious. The cowherd boy knows that they actually went into the mouth of a demon and they actually got devoured. I mean, they spend some time, you know, is it actually a fake python? Is it actually a cave? No, we know it's actually a python with his mouth very wide open. And they chose to go in and say, he said, we got devoured. And in fact, we experienced a burning sensation. So we were actually being poisoned. So how is it that you brought us back to life? So, you know, conscious, completely conscious entity, he knows that he's been brought back to life. And Krishna's response to him is very humorous. He's got the antidote for neutralizing any poison. He can even kill the entity that's sending out the poison. So, and of course, anybody who's experienced his particular brand of poison is actually going to be relishing it like honey. So interesting. This is that transcendental relationship. There's a nectarian exchange. Because both parties, Krishna and the devotee of Krishna, are completely conscious. And Krishna's witty remarks, they increase the cowherd boy's loving friendship with him. So it's due to devotees being in such consciousness, Krishna consciousness, that they are in fact transcendentally situated in Krishna. So to explain this philosophically, the statement that they're transcendentally situated in Krishna, Krishna explains this. He says, they are in me, meaning he's carrying his devotees within his heart. So just as Maharaj Parikshit is actually fixing his heart on the pastimes of Krishna, in this case, the pastime of the killing of Agasura, Krishna too is carrying within his heart his devotees. He says, and this is him talking in Bhagavad Gita, where, you know, he explains so much of his heart and his functioning, so we get an understanding of how everything is operating. So Krishna says, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I'm equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I'm also a friend to him. So he's describing that transcendental exchange, how it works. Is he's carrying within his heart the devotee is also carrying Krishna within his heart. So this is from Bhagavad Gita 9:29. And in fact, this particular statement explains this internal potency operating, in that Krishna, he's actually partial to his devotee. He makes a distinction. I mean, he can understand, it's a highly conscious, completely conscious entity, so he can distinguish the heart of the particular person. So he can distinguish who's acting as a friend towards him and who isn't. So he's actually partial to the one who's devoted to him, seeing him as his friend. And he's partial to those that please him with their hearing and their other devotional processes. And he says they exist in him because of their attraction to him. So that attraction is the binding aspect, alongside the external acts that are performed for pleasing Lord Krishna. So actually, Lord Krishna has bhakti or devotion for his devotees, so it works reciprocally. And the state of being in divine consciousness, it's also described by Lord Krishna. You know, we heard these exalted personalities like the cowherd boys, and the sweetness with which they're having an exchange with Krishna. You know, it's a state of being in complete divine consciousness. And there's an elaboration on this divine consciousness. A person in divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening and closing his eyes, he always knows that the material senses are engaged with their object and that he is aloof from them. So there's, this is from Bhagavad Gita 5:8. So there's this description of the position of somebody who's engaged in this loving transcendental exchange or loving transcendental service with Krishna. They appear to be acting with their body. So there's external movement, the limbs are being used in a particular way, the eyes in a particular way, the ears in a particular way. But the consciousness is such that the person's always aware of their actual position, which is that position of they're engaging themselves in a spiritual activity. Means they understand everything's in relation to Krishna. So there's a detachment from the operation of the senses because the consciousness is fixed on Krishna. There's that kind of detachment. Yes. So a person in Krishna consciousness, it can be considered to always be free because they not bound up with how their senses are operating. Even if they appear to be engaged in matters that are connected to the senses, because of that consciousness being fixed on Krishna, which allows for detachment from the operation of the senses. This is interesting because, you know, one can say that seeing is an action of the senses meant for receiving knowledge, and speaking is an action of the senses meant for work. In either case, although the knowledge may be taken in, the consciousness is always fixed on Krishna. So it's the senses are operating almost on their own, so to speak. That's why the statement that one feels as though one isn't doing anything at all, because the consciousness has one point on which it's fixed. So, and this is where Maharaj Parikshit is, or how he's operating and how he's conscious of operating, because the word is, or the phrase is particularly used that he fixed his heart on the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So he's functioning in this kind of way. I mean, one recalls that actually he is facing death. There's poison within his body, but he's separate from that. His consciousness is fixed on Krishna, hearing the pastimes of Krishna. And he's very intelligently going through it, and hence having asked the two questions right in the beginning, you know, wanting to know about this time lapse in when the boys relayed the pastime. So what one could say, there's actually an interaction in love or prema between the devotee and God. And this sheds light on the verse, ye yatamam prapajante, as one surrenders unto me, I respond accordingly. That's Bhagavad Gita 4.11. So Krishna can be described as being devoted to his devotee. And Srila Suta Goswami, in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.86.59, there's a particular verse. It's not connected to these intimate pastimes at all. It's a verse that looks at the activity of two kings, just like Maharaj Parikshit was a king. And Srila Suta Goswami is commenting on these two kings who are very devoted to Lord Krishna. And I'm just going to read the first few lines of this verse because it's relevant to this discussion. Evam sva bhakta yo rajan bhagavan bhakta bhakti mam. O king, thus the personality of Godhead, who is devoted to his own devotees, stayed for some time with his two great devotees, Shrutadeva and Bahulasva, teaching them the behavior of perfect saints. Thus the Lord returned to Dwarka. So there's this specific phrase that's there, that Krishna is devoted to his own devotees. I mean, he's actually taking the time to instruct these two kings who had that exchange of love with him. They were on that plane. So they had the real qualification for being recognized by the Supreme Personality of God, because I'd mentioned earlier, actually Krishna is quite partial. And in their case, it was again their single-minded devotion whereby they worshiped Lord Krishna, and in their case, they had been instructed to worship the Brahmanas, that it was none different from worshipping Krishna. So that's actually what they'd been doing. So Krishna recognized this single-minded devotion of theirs, and hence it said, the phrase was used, he's devoted to his devotees. He was actually devoted to these two kings. So here, in this section that we just read, what you did in your Komara age, was told as if it happened in Poganda. The story of your life is most amazing. So both Parikshit and Sukadev, they were both thoroughly entranced by the sweet narration of these topics of Lord Krishna, and this is stated by Srila Sanatan Goswami. He specifically makes that statement. Both Parikshit and Sukadev were thoroughly entranced by the sweet narration of your topics. This is from Sri Krishna Lila Stava. So, King Parikshit's devotion is stated by him. I drink the nectar. And this comes from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So this is Srila, Maharaj Parikshit actually recognizes this exchange in prema or love between himself and Krishna, because he actually makes the statement, I drink the nectar. So this kind of, I mean, the words in Bhakti Yoga is used of transcendental mellow and relishing. So there's the way that service is discharged to Krishna in this kind of loving, I guess it's a flow of nectar between the two parties. This sweet loving mood is developed from one's previous life activities or by the association of devotees that are completely devoted. They've got a complete, Krishna's completely fixed in their hearts. So this is actually how it comes to be that one can start relishing the word that's used. This transcendental mood of exchange. So it's only by developing faith in associating with a devotee who has Krishna fixed in his heart, or by having in one's previous life executed devotional activities, that one can actually come to experience, taste this exchange of love. And the same thing happens with the hearing of Lord Krishna's activities, that it allows one to feel this transcendental happiness, this there's almost again an exchange with Krishna through reading or hearing about his pastimes. So somebody who's come to, you know, a spiritual platform, meaning, you know, the state where there's, you know, detachment from the functioning of the senses and the mind is becoming fixed on Krishna, the first symptom that's there is that the person's always joyful. So you read Maharaj Parikshit, at no point do you get any sense that, you know, there's poison coursing through his body. It's complete joy. And that's the same symptom is there when one comes to the spiritual plane of performing service for Krishna through one's senses, and also beginning the process of trying to fix the pastimes and Lord Krishna himself within one's heart. And this, again, it comes simply reading these pastimes and also associating with persons who are very interested in spiritual life. Specifically persons who are completely determined to achieve the favor of Lord Krishna, you know, his partiality, which we hear he certainly has towards his devotees. as they're engaged in this transcendental loving exchange with Krishna at his lotus feet. Through coming to the spiritual platform and residing on that spiritual platform, there's a very compelling force that starts operating. And in the nature of devotion, this is called vibhava. So I was thinking about this compelling force in a very simple way. I was just having an exchange with a newer devotee the other day, and the person was saying, you know, there was a shift in the time of waking up. So there was, the alarm would go off and, you know, there'd be a reluctance to get up. And I was thinking, I didn't say it to the young or the newer devotee, I was thinking, actually, you know, when there's this compelling force, this desire to perform service for Krishna, the minute the alarm goes off, one springs up, because there is that compelling force. There's no such thing as holding on to sleep. It doesn't matter. The more important thing is proceeding into the day with one's devotional activities. So I was just thinking that this vibhava operates very wonderfully, even with something as simple as that. And one enjoys this kind of transcendental bliss. That's the extraordinary part in entering into this kind of relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I've tried to cover a little bit a fundamental aspect that was I was seeing in these verses. If there's any thought on the subject matter or some elaboration, I'd be delighted. So.
Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you for your class. Thank you for your class. You were mentioning some very interesting points, profound points. One of them being King Padishit, or these kings, or these two personalities. Were you referring to King Padishit Maharaj? You were referring to two different kings? Which kings were they? What were their names?
It's from the 86th chapter of the 10th canto.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was hoping you'd find it. That gives me time to formulate my thoughts.
I think it's Baladeva, something to that effect,
yeah. Okay. Well, anyways, you also mentioned that Krishna is partial to his devotees, and he's devoted to these kings.
Mm-hmm.
And because they have the qualities, and in one of his purports, Prabhupada mentions the qualities of Padishit Maharaj. And just in general, the word qualities, we're always told in the scriptures we should develop the qualification or these qualities. And one thing that came to mind is that in the material world, they generally equate qualifications with quantifications. I have a PhD, I have a master's degree, associate's degree, bachelor's degree. Therefore, when you apply for jobs, they ask you what are your qualifications. And therefore, they list actually not their qualifications according to Bhagavatam, but their quantifications. Here's my resume. But we see that politicians, or anyone in general in a very powerful, prestigious position, they ascend to power because they're worthy on the outside. But eventually, they'll descend from power because they weren't trustworthy on the inside. And so we see that there's a distinction between one's quantifications and qualifications. And even in the scriptures, sometimes there's so many pastimes. Hanuman and the squirrel. Hanuman was concerned about his quantifications. He could lift a million boulders and big boulders. And then he criticized the squirrel for only being able to lift a little. Same with the illiterate Brahmana pastimes. The proud scholars, they were thinking, we're authorities on the Gita because we have more knowledge. But Lord Chaitanya told the literal Brahmana, they have the quantifications, but you have the qualifications because you're neither envious nor are you vengeful, but you're just worried, you're trying to do your best. So from these lessons, one of my favorite quotes says, if we try our best, then Krishna will help us. If we try to be the best, then Krishna will humble us. And one last point, in chapter 10, verse 4 through 5 of the Gita, Krishna says, I am the controller of fame and infamy, and not your quantifications or your qualifications. The reason we receive any mercy, any fame, is not chanting a million rounds or whatever quantification you have, but only due to Krishna's mercy. So my question is that that may be an obstacle in our devotional service, because the tendency is that when we naturally, we're conditioned souls, and in the material world, we're conditioned to compare ourselves with other people. And I've known many devotees, I'm sure I've did it in the past, that I've seen devotees get initiated. And I remember recently one devotee said they only been in Krishna consciousness a year and they're getting initiated. Or, you know, so sometimes we compare, I chant more rounds, I've been in more. So what are some steps we could take to move forward to gain the realization that just because we may be in Krishna consciousness longer, we may chant rounds more, we may do austerities, that does not mean we can oblige Krishna. We're actually saying, I'm the controller, not Krishna. Krishna's obliged to give me mercy more because I'm his greater devotee. Because like you said, Krishna's devoted to his devotees. So what are some obstacles? How can we avoid this tendency when we hear verses like you were mentioning, Krishna's devoted to his devotees, but we hear that the great devotees never think themselves devotees. And so maybe you could expand on some of these points.
So the concern is the distinction that you made between the external achievements and internal qualities that are there. And particularly you were pointing to the external achievement, like on the material plane, it may be an impressive resume or even fame, drawing from the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And whereas contrasted with that is internal quality. And you were looking at the matter of trustworthiness as an internal quality, and perhaps the other internal quality you hadn't identified specifically, but at least you were saying that the quantities of austerities performed, or even specifically number of rounds chanted, might not be okay, because again you're looking at this concept of the internal merit versus the external merit. So well, on a material level, the achievement of an impressive resume, let's say, in one's work area, that can be the result of piety from a previous life, that it's with great ease that one can achieve academic qualifications, or that it's with ease that one finds oneself settling comfortably in the material world in terms of one's occupation. So that can be a reflection of previous pious acts that are performed, that there's that sense of comfort in the material world. Now, the chanting of rounds or the performance of some austerity, like, you know, being on time for a particular artik or a particular harinam. Those are not external things. Those are those are actually the result of internal strength that's come as a result of the kindness bestowed upon one by somebody more advanced in spiritual life. Generally, one spiritual master, it may be somebody who's takes care of one in one spiritual life, but it's through their kindness upon one that one is having the strength to undertake those transcendental activities. So it's not comparable to material success or material activities, which may be the result of mundane piety, you know, having fed a poor person, having dug a well. Well, dug a well could still fall into something more extra pious, but having opened a hospital, etc. So it's not comparable. It's because the activity that's taken up on a transcendental level is does not have the motive of attaining pious credit for oneself. So it's not comparable. It's not with that kind of motive. The performance of the transcendental activity, first of all, it's only one's only able to perform it because of kindness bestowed upon one that gives one the strength to perform it. And secondly, it's done with the purpose of pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's not that motive to increase one's own piety or pious credits. Those credits may be their transcendental pious credits, but it's not comparable to material credits, because generally material credits, pious credits, are coming from a motive of attaining those credits. And certainly with more religious persons, there's full awareness that if these kind of acts are performed, pious credits accrue. It's like, you know, keeping a bank balance on a subtle level. Now, the idea of fame, say at the present time, there's, I noticed this, like in the English monarchy, an American woman has entered the monarchy. So it's a person not with a royal background, but the person has been put into a position of, you know, overseeing the distribution of charity. So her and the prince, her prince husband, will travel to all parts of the world where they actually give recognition to particular charities, and no doubt help fund them too, because that's their role, as would be the role of a king, to be very charitable to the citizens. So this person is now in a position where she's experiencing great fame, is great recognition of this person by virtue of the position she's in. So one may say, oh, the person doesn't have, isn't royal by birth, but this person's in this position. This is the result of previous piety, mundane piety. And in fact, one learns that the person's not even vegetarian, so regulative principles of religious life are not being followed. But the person is experiencing extreme fame, is in a position of, you know, being able to magnanimously give to persons that are attempting to improve the material condition of persons in this world. So that's a different fame from the fame that Maharaj Parikshit is going to have from having spend 7 days hearing the narration of Krishna's pastimes, the pastimes of his devotee, or everything leading up to this particular point, which is said to be extremely confidential, and that one is in a very privileged position. So it's a position where the privilege has come from the kindness, again, bestowed upon him by his spiritual master, that he's in that position where he's actually wanting to hear these most extraordinary, most confidential topics close to his death. And he's considered to have lived a very noble life. Now, the nobility of his life, where he may indeed have performed all the charitable necessary acts to see to the well-being of the citizens, is accompanied with transcendental activities. So not only, and transcendental activities cannot be performed without a base of keeping regulation in one's life. So certainly that is present there in Maharaj Parikshit. So as opposed to somebody in this present time who's in that kind of royal order but is not performing the regulative or doesn't have that regulative base, it doesn't allow for, you know, moving in a transcendental direction. It's still on a very material plane. So the fame coming to Maharaj Parikshit for his transcendental activity is quite different from that mundane fame. And he's considered glorious because he's transcended all the activities of his body, whatever this poison coursing through his body, in order to use his sense to, close to death, just be absorbed in hearing the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So that kind of transcendental fame is on a whole different plane. So, you know, some thought.
Thank you for your points. Regarding your point regarding regulation, maybe you could expand on, because you made some profound points. Definitely the material fame is different from the spiritual fame, but we see in the end that Krishna sometimes, even if you have spiritual fame, Krishna takes that fame away to test your quality. Are you attached to Krishna? Are you attached to the fame? And we see that many devotees failed the test, like Indra. He was supposed to be a devotee of Krishna, but as soon as the members of Vrindavan start glorifying Krishna and Govardhan Leela, he became just as demoniac as any materialist. And he performed so many austerities. This goes to my point, because you mentioned regulation. And regulation means something performed regularly. How to maintain your spirituality or your status quo, whether spiritual or material. And in chapter 17, one verse I was reading recently, chapter 17 of the Gita, it talks about austerities. It talks about different austerities and modes of nature. And it's described that austerities perform under the modes of passion. That means one performs austerities, you could say whether material or spiritual austerities, for fame and recognition. And Prabhupada in the purport, he says, one who performs austerities for fame and recognition, they won't last very long, because that's the nature of the world. It doesn't matter how much we do, we're not going to always be glorified. And as soon as the glorification goes away, our austerities goes away, our good character goes away. And we see, like, politicians, they perform austerities too. They spend years in school, years acquiring so many college degrees. That's a very difficult austerity. But we see that many analogies, we see that the body cannot stand without the spirit soul. Our clothes don't stand without somebody inside them. A building doesn't stand without a foundation. So we see that these politicians, or whether we material austerity or spiritual austerity, we see that our quantifications don't stand without our qualifications. And one thing I forgot to mention, one thing I normally say is that you usually love this particular saying, is that what is the use of attending Harvard without humility, Princeton without principles, Yale without yielding, or Stanford without standards? So my question is that there's that verse that says, Bahu Jama Kade Yadi Shravanam Kirtan Tabutana Paya Krishna Pade Primadan. This is from Adi Lila chapter 8, verse 16. It says, even if you chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the quantifications for many births and deaths, if you don't have the qualifications inside, then your chanting of Hare Krishna won't stand. You'll eventually give it up. And that purport, Prabhupada mentions what one's qualifications are. Trinadapi Suni Chena Toro Iva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtani Asadahiri. Offer respect to others, always. And there's many things that prevent us from offering respect, competition, or vengeance. And so my question is that, I forgot my question, but these are some of the points. But, my question, comment is that if we don't, first of all, if we don't develop the qualifications, we'll be miserable. We're hurting ourselves, but at the same time, if we don't develop the qualifications, we're also giving religion a bad name. Just like Indra tried to, wow, this is religion. We see it in the material world. So when you describe spiritual fame, in the end, we're hurting ourselves, but still, what are some steps we can move to gain the proper motivation so we won't give religion a bad name? And that's what people see religion as, with people with no qualifications. They're simply criticizing, competing with each other like in the material world, and they give religion a bad name. So how can we give up this ideal that I'm a devotee of Krishna and he should give me spiritual fame? Oh, my fame is, you know, like Padishi Maharaj. I'm chanting Hare Krishna, you know. It's different from the material fame. Actually, it's really not really. You're actually making it much worse for Krishna consciousness if you have that motivation. So how can we give up that motivation?
Well, there's different things that one's carrying in one's heart other than Krishna. That's why it needs a whole cleansing process. And that cleansing process may involve cleansing that particular motivation that one achieves fame for one's spiritual activities. of course, the secret there is to continue with the spiritual activities, to continue with one's Krishna consciousness, and to monitor oneself. One has to do internal monitoring. Because, you know, there's that expression Srila Prabhupada always uses of becoming a thoroughly honest person. So that's what one wants, to become thoroughly honest. Means that through the internal monitoring, one is checking the motivations by which one is performing devotional service, and trying to make it exclusively one motivation, and that is that it's one's activities are for the pleasure of Krishna. So if one has identified a motive other than that, then it's one's duty to try and weed it out. So, and the way to do that is, it's nobody else may be seeing that, or maybe it's a little bit visible on the external, but it's something one needs to grapple with in one's mind. So one needs to talk to the mind. you know, you can't actually go with whatever the mind's saying. So the mind wants its own like pleasure perks, but you can't go with that, because otherwise, you know, one degrades oneself. So and just with continuing one's external activities that are on the transcendental plane, Krishna takes a hand, because again, it's an exchange. He takes a hand in to cleanse some of that ugly stuff away, so that it's the heart is more clean and more pure and more fit to have him reside within it. So yeah, one continues. And the same thing with chanting. It's not that one actually stops chanting because one identifies that one has this motivation that isn't, that's kind of a selfish motivation that's within the mind. It's not that one stops chanting, one continues. And that's the recommendation. You keep chanting, you keep performing the external activities that are for Krishna's pleasure, and even though they one is introducing one's own motive, one still keeps trying and trying and doing the trying on the internal, and you know, trying to put the mind aside, because the mind is a material sense too. So one has to come to a point of getting detached from the mind, so the mind does its thing, but one continues with the spiritual activities, with the loving exchange with Krishna. That's where the focus needs to shift. But one has to still struggle with the reality of the material mind, and one has to speak to the mind. Because you know, there's Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he exposes all the ghastly motives that are in the mind. You know, the pretension, the hypocrisy, and you know, he calls it for what it is, the wicked mind. And then he looks at those particular qualities in the mind and he labels them and makes comparisons like donkey urine, or you know. So how much one identifies with the mind will depend on how much one is able to, you know, be so dispassionate about it and label it in that kind of way. So one may not be fully able to do that because one identifies with the mind, but still one has to understand that the mind is a material sense, and that's on a much lower level than anything where one is engaging and trying to engage all one's senses in the service of Krishna. So whatever the protest and the dirt that's there, one continues. We're trying to engage it, one's intelligence, to perform service to Lord Krishna. One doesn't stop. And certainly not for the mind. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.